Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, it's a great favorite here, Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Welcome, Yancey.
Thanks, Alan. Good to be back.
Yancey, there are big battles between Andrew Cuomo and everybody these days. You've just written extensively about this. Take us down the laundry list of battles that he's got right now.
Well, you know, let's back up to where this all escalated, and that would be last year at the end of the calendar year when the pay raise for lawmakers fell apart. And this was a deal where a commission was supposed to decide whether to give lawmakers their first pay raise in, 18 years. And it seemed as though there was sort of a gentleman's agreement between all the players, Senate, Assembly, and Governor, to let this commission take control of it. But then the governor started basically bad-mouthing the idea of the raise, saying, questioning whether the lawmakers deserved it. Lo and behold, his appointees to the commission, using much the same phraseology as the governor, voted down the raise. And ever since then, I think that just all the 6 years of bruised feelings and rough and tumble politics just kind of, you know, just reached a crescendo or something like that in the falling apart of the pay raise. So since then, we've seen fights with the Senate Republicans, fights with the Senate Democrats, fights with the Working Families Party, fight with the Assembly Democrats. The only one he's not squabbled with is the Assembly Republicans, but then again, he just largely ignores them because they don't have much power.
So tell us about some of the individual fights. Let's, for example, take the fight with the traitors, otherwise known as the Independent Democratic Conference, who have left the Democrats to make common cause with the Republicans and, frankly, to just about keep them in power, although one can debate whether that's absolutely true.
Well, they started off as a gang of four.
Right.
Now they're a gang of eight. Mm-hmm. And the most recent flare-up was the defection of Senator Jose Peralta from Queens, who dropped from the mainline Democrats to the breakaway group.
And was immediately rewarded with a committee chairmanship and some extra money.
Right, because that's what you get when you join the breakaway group. You get a stipend, you get a better title, you get probably more money for your office. So then there was, of course, lots of finger-pointing. The mainline Democrats were mad. The Working Families Party, which is labor-backed, which tends to be more liberal than the mainline Dems, blamed Governor Cuomo because they feel like he could have stopped this. He could stop the whole breakaway group if he would just unite the party. The governor's office shot back with pretty feisty quotes saying, wait a minute, the Working Families Party is the ones that have tried to splinter the Democrats and push them farther to the left. But that's just one example of some of the back and forth that's gone on. Let's go back to the pay raise. When it fell apart in December, when they tried to revive it and then it fell apart again, reportedly the governor's staff sent text to some of the members blaming the Senate Republicans. Now, there's always finger pointing in politics, but almost to affirmatively go out there with an action like that where you're calling out people individually, I think that's where you can see that this is all escalated.
But Yancey Roy, doesn't it come down to this? A lot of people, in addition to all the philosophical stuff, just don't like the governor because they think he's not a nice guy.
You know, he's got a lot of allies in the sense of there are a lot of folks who do support some of the policies that he's put through, right? Whether it's same-sex marriage, whether it's property tax cap, whether now he's pushing for a pathway to free tuition. But he has a bare-knuckled style. Some folks call him a bully. And so he's gotten a lot of his agenda through. But, you know, there's been a lot of disgruntlement by the lawmakers that have to work with him.
But, Yancey, it's so interesting because as you discuss this, if he's going after the legislature and saying, okay, I'll give you your pay raise, but you have to limit your outside income that you're making, which in my mind is legalized bribery. He's right. It's not that he's a bad man. He may be an unpleasant fellow, but in fact, he's right on the issue, right?
There are a lot of folks who want no outside incomes, who want lawmakers to, you know, not be able to make money on the side like some of them do either in real estate or in law. Some, in fact, are doctors, to follow more the congressional rule where you have a very limited amount of money you can earn outside of your full-time job. The lawmakers say, okay, if we do that, then you have to make us full-time and you have to give us a raise because right now we're considered part-time.
There's a Yiddish word, it's called chutzpah. It means unbelievable gall. You have to give us more than we're making. What? By the time they're all done with their Lulus and the extra money and everything, most of them are making about $100,000.
Oh, yeah. I would say on average over $100,000. And Here's the thing. Politically, it's a hard sell upstate for any of the legislators, Republican or Democrat, to vote for it, even if they might privately think, hey, look, 17, 18 years without a raise, who does that? That's just, you know, on the face of it, that's not right. But if you're in an upstate district, it's going to be a tough thing to face your constituents when they know you voted for a pay raise for yourself.
And the interesting thing about that one, Yancey, is I've tried to explain to my students for years, is it is not necessary that you may know who your assemblyman is in New York City or on Long Island. But when you get upstate, these guys are heroes or they're very well known and everybody tracks them. If they want to get onto a television show, they call up and say, can we be on the television tonight? And everybody says, get over here as fast as you possibly can. That doesn't happen in New York City.
Right. Or even look at weekly papers upstate, which still, you know, service many communities. If you look at any of the small papers, if you're traveling or whatever, an upstate senator or assemblyman, his press release, his announcement, his interview with the local outlet is almost always some sort of front page news. Senator so-and-so announces grants available. Contact his office. I mean, it's, you know, they're very influential and very powerful in those districts.
I want to move a little bit to Governor Cuomo for a second. Many of us, I'm certainly at the head of the list, think that the guy is running for president as well as another term.
He's certainly playing in two fields right now.
Right. And so, first of all, he'll run for governor. I believe I saw the figure, maybe I'm wrong, $22 million in his campaign coffers already.
Close enough, yeah.
And so that's a lot of money. I had this feeling in the back of my head, do we know what his real relationship with Donald Trump is? The reason I ask you that is in the beginning he was sort of being namby-pamby, I got to get along with him. And then all of a sudden, I think he took a look and threw some salt over his shoulder or something and said, if I want to be president, I got to really go after this guy. Can you sort of give us the lay of the land?
Well, you know, the day after the election, the governor did an interview with one of the New York City outlets. I'm forgetting off the top of my head which one. But he said that Donald Trump could be a positive for New York because he understands the city. Well, he immediately got blowback.
Of course.
From Democratic officials, from advocacy groups, everyone from the left. What are you talking about?
Or everybody who had voted for Hillary, which was most of the state.
Right, in a state that was overwhelmingly voted against Trump. I think he tacked back to the left, and he's been steadily...
The governor has
tacked to the left. And he's definitely picked up on every issue that resonates with the left nationally, the immigration, free tuition. He's been out there. Oh, and let's not forget this week, on the week that President Trump announced a Supreme Court nominee, Andrew Cuomo says he wants to put abortion rights into the New York State Constitution and guarantee it in case the Supreme Court ever acts to restrict Roe v. Wade rights. I think
a brilliant move, in my opinion.
It plays very well in the state. Absolutely. I think that he is obviously keeping his name in the mix. He's the leader of a big state. He's a name that's well known on the political scene. I think it's right now keeping his name in the mix, along with some issues that are important to him. You know, these are issues that he's pushed through the years.
But is there any evidence that he could be president? That anybody, you know, you see these national polls, they give you a whole bunch of choices. His name is at the bottom of the list.
Let me ask you this. We're in 2017. Let's back up 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone said, Alan, is there any reason to believe that Donald Trump is going to be president?
Yeah, I think you have a point there. And I know that Andrew Cuomo, and I've dealt with him over the years, is very single-minded, so you can't count him out. Of course, he would have to take some speech lessons.
You know what would be interesting? This is sort of the political strategy realm and be interesting for political sciences. What is the best bet for a guy who wants to run in 2020? Do you run for re-election in 2018, or do you sit out? And the argument for sitting out and stepping back would be you don't get entangled in any battles with the legislature. You kind of rid yourself of some controversies, and you're free to raise money. And I think of that because look at our next-door neighbor, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who tried to run in 2016. When he started, some folks thought, hey, he could be the you know, not so conservative Republican who could win this thing. And then he gets bogged down in Bridgegate and other issues in the New Jersey taxes and other issues in New Jersey. And he never took off for a variety of reasons. That wasn't the only one. But he was really hamstrung in a way by staying in office. I wonder if you could make an argument of Andrew Cuomo or anybody else, a governor, if you'd be better off not running for a third term so you don't have to worry about two things at once. And then you've got at least 6 months or more where you can raise money before you even have to declare.
Yeah. But there doesn't seem to be any indication that he's going to buy that argument. You know, it seems to be he's going to run for governor, and there now his father, you will remember, at the last minute decided not to run for president because he said he had too much important business like getting the budget done in New York State. And, you know, if there's one thing I know about Andrew Cuomo, he takes a lot of plays out of the father's playbook.
Well, and how did that work out for Mario?
Didn't work out that well.
Right.
But I don't know, because, you know, the number one question as a biographer of Mario Cuomo that I get asked is, why didn't he run for president? And, you know, a lot of people have different theories. Some think that there was something in the family background or, you know, this or that. But I think now Andrew is removed from that generation, right?
You know, and looking back at Mario and this decision in 92, he also, and you know this better than me because you were closer to this, you've been here longer, you were closer to all the players than me at that time.
I'm older.
You know, he also let the talk generate and generate and generate. And then they had the plane waiting.
He encouraged it.
Yeah, and he had the tarmac. The plane was on the tarmac waiting for him, famously, right?
I was on the Today Show that morning and said he was running for president. That's what I was doing.
So when you say the father's playbook, there's certainly some things you could learn maybe from the father's playbook and some things you might not want to do. Look, if you were never going to run and you decided not to run, you might not have the plane on the tarmac. You might not let all the talk get that far.
It was also Mario.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about Andrew. I believe Andrew does have the father, his father, Mario, as the main focus in his life. I think some of it is love. I think some of it is, frankly, competition. You know, I could get where Papa didn't get, or even Papa might be proud of me, for getting there. So I think he's going to run for governor, and I think if he can, he'll run for president.
It's gonna be a lot of cards to be played before we're even at that point, right? I mean, before folks start really revving up and raising money, we're talking about a couple of years, right? It seems week to week you don't know what's going to happen with the new Trump administration. But certainly 2 years from now, a lot of things could change on the Democratic front. Could he be a player? You can't rule that out.
Or suppose Donald Trump doesn't like Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And decides he will finance somebody, because right now on the other side, nobody's got the kind of money you really have to have.
Right.
So will he find a person, a Bloombergian type of person, but it won't be Bloomberg. Can he find somebody who smells good and put the money behind him that is needed?
Right. Now we're talking about the strategy on the other side of the field, which is if you're the Republicans and you think Andrew Cuomo wants to run, what's the best thing you can do? Well, you can just basically give him hell the next 2 years, either legislatively or, like you say, find a candidate who can make a strong run, even if not necessarily win, because it is tough for a Republican in this state to win statewide office. But you could find a credible candidate, pour a lot of money into it, make the reelection bid of Cuomo very tough, make him spend a lot of money, maybe bruise him up a little bit. So if you're the Republican side, you want to look at this as trying to run a lot of interference.
Now, Yancey Roy, obviously Chuck Schumer, great guy, been before these microphones many times. He's got a big problem. Everybody's looking to him to be the antidote to Trump. Can he live up to that?
Well, obviously he's a very capable politician, and he has risen to the ranks where he is the minority leader in the Senate. So, I mean, you'd never want to underestimate Chuck Schumer, for sure. But you're right in that he has got pressures from, now that he has reached this position, he's got pressures from all sides. He has got pressure from some to say, give Trump a chance, try to make things work, see if some Democratic initiatives can be passed along as you agree to compromise in different issues. Then you've got folks on the left who are already, as you've seen this week, protesting at his office, sending out press releases, saying don't confirm a single member, a single cabinet member, don't take the immigration order lying down, fight as hard as you can, do the filibuster against the Supreme Court nominee. He's certainly got a lot of pressure from either side. He's got a lot of responsibility as the Senate Democrat leader. And how he decides to play these issues are going to be crucial, to say the least, in the next few months, in the first 100 days of this administration.
Well, let me just say, Yancey Roy, that I've watched Chuck Schumer over the years, and it looks like he's a little bit, I don't know, because I really do like the guy, but a little bit flummoxed as to which way to go.
You don't sense a clear direction on how he'll do these cabinet and Supreme Court nominees?
Because Harry Reid, for example, his predecessor, he would just get up there and really mouth off, really let the other guys have it. You haven't seen that from Chuck.
Well, Schumer's very strategic, too.
Yes, he is.
I think you always get the sense that he thinks things through more than once before deciding where he's going to go on an issue.
I want to get to the hum around Albany. It hasn't let up yet. Some of the very best buddies of Andrew Cuomo are about to go on trial facing some real tough jail time as a result of Pete Bharara's work. These guys, one of them has already pled guilty, Todd Howe, and that's going to be very dangerous. We don't really know. Joe Prococo, who he described, as we all have said, it's now part of his name, as the long-lost third brother who Mario favored, the real question is, will anybody throw Andrew under the bus?
Well, this whole issue is basically the biggest issue underscoring everything that's going on in Albany right now.
Sure.
The next trial date, I believe, is March 1st, although that's probably going to be formality sort of thing. I don't think we expect anything to start that soon. But you're right. In a sense, we've got Joe Prococo, the governor's former closest advisor, is one of several people who have been indicted basically for allegedly fixing contracts on some of the governor's most lucrative economic development projects. It ties into State University of New York. It ties into campaign donors. It ties into, in some ways, the war chest that the governor has been able to accumulate. And it will absolutely have an effect on how the governor fares this legislative session. What might it mean for 2018? What might it mean for if he wants to play in presidential politics? It's going to depend a lot on how this federal trial plays out. Is he damaged in any way? Are there things that get revealed about how all of these contracts were done that undermine the governor? I think we talked about the Republican strategy a minute ago. I think that they are absolutely going to be watching this closely. And if they feel he's damaged in any way, that is going to severely, if that happens, that would severely change the tone of how things proceed in Albany.
Well, I think you're right. I'm fascinated by it, however, because I'm worried. I wonder about how much people know about Cuomo. You know, you referenced how things go, but I don't know that everybody really has the slightest idea about anything. And you're a reporter up here. How anything goes that goes on in Albany goes. I mean, I don't think people know anything about Albany. It bothers me, but they do know that he's Mario's son. They do know, oh, Cuomo, that's good. And his approval ratings are not bad, right?
Sure. Yeah, he's doing well. I think that, you know, sometimes the goings on in Albany or probably any state capital, whereas journalists follow it, you follow it, there are a lot of people who follow it very closely. Some people don't follow it all. Some people, it's like the baseball standings, you know? You open the paper and you read where the standings are, but you might not read about every game. Occasional check on something. How's it going? Oh, I think it's going okay.
And those are the ones who really do something, as opposed to most people who know nothing about Albany.
And that's one thing that might happen in this upcoming federal trial. We expect there to be a trial, is that there's a potential for a discovering about a lot of things about how business works in Albany.
Is Preet Bharara a great fear for this governor, for Governor Cuomo? I mean, after all, he has done this work, which has gotten all these indictments. He's sending Shelley Silva to jail. He's sending the Republican leader to jail, Dean Skelos. And the third man in the room, and the famous three men in the room was Andrew Cuomo, who has not been indicted. But is the theory around Albany that something could come out of this trial that, in fact, for example, if Prococo in some way threw the governor under the bus, that could really change things?
Well, I don't know if there's a prevailing theory so much as there's a clear-eyed look that we don't know exactly what may or may not be revealed in this trial. And certainly when we've seen U.S. Attorney Bharara go after the Assembly Speaker, Sheldon Silver, or the Senate Leader, Dean Skelos, like any prosecutor, you were able to use either family members or friendly people who had done business with the person to lean on them for leverage, to turn state witness, so to speak.
And so nobody knows.
And I think some of the key of whatever happened, we know what the allegations are, bid rigging. What we don't know is how much any of the participants will fight the charges, admit to the charges, what might be revealed in the charges.
Or get their wife off the hook, for example.
You're making a reference to the fact that part of this complaint is that Joe Prococo's wife got a more or less a no-show job, and yet she's not named into the complaint right now. She's not indicted. And is there any kind of pressure in that regard for someone who's indicted, like a Joe Prococo, to cooperate with the prosecution? All of that might be. All of that's like some of the drama that's waiting to be played out. We don't know actually how that's going to play out just yet.
Finally, we only have 2 minutes, but I want to end with this. Andrew Cuomo knows that he's been winning in New York City. He's been winning on Long Island. But he's having a hell of a time upstate New York. And he has an economic development plan, which many people think is a total bust. Is it?
Well, you know, he has certainly tried to say that and contend that upstate is on the rebound. I think, and they tout the unemployment figures. But as you know, and as I think most people know, those can be a little misleading, because if there are people leaving the state, if the number of job seekers are reduced, well, then of course the unemployment rate is going to go down. I think he is trying to do projects that, in his view, he thinks will revive the upstate economy. I think that folks, even if they're glad right now that there's investment in Buffalo or some of these other places, Albany, I don't know if anyone is as convinced as the governor is that the state has turned around economically.
Well, he does have his critics on that issue, and we'll have to sort of see whether or not he can deliver something. I know with the seeming disappearance of Elaine Calieros, who has also been indicted, who is the head of SUNY Poly, that the business that he was bringing to the Albany area and the other places seems to be in some danger.
Well, also just look to the west of here, what happened in the Utica area.
Sure.
There was another computer chip program that was supposed to be launched. All of a sudden, the European investor behind that has killed it in the last few months. There's a lot of anger, Republican and Democratic sides, from legislators out there at SUNY, at the administration. How did this happen? You know, some of its changes in the industry. But that, if anything, that's been the project that people have been looking at is, what's going on with upstate development.
We're out of time, Yancey, but I did want to ask you one question. We only have time for a yes
Uh-oh.
Or no. Is there going to be a constitutional convention in New York or not?
I would say no.
I would say no. And I would say it ought to be a no. Anyway, we are out of time. Our guest has been the wonderful Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. Yancey, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Alan.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.